मनसि प्रतिष्ठिता मनो मे वाचि प्रतिष्ठितम् आविराविर्मयेधि वेदस्य म आनीस्थः श्रुतं मे मा प्रहासिः अनेनाधीतेनाहोरात्रां संदधामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारमवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् अवतु वक्तारम्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। This is the Shantipatha of Aitareya, which is very linguistic. Shantipatha, yes. My speech is established in my mind, and my mind is established in my speech. Vang me manasi pratishthita, mano me vachi pratishthita. Avir avir maedhi. Be revealed, be opened to me, be opened to me, mind and speech. Vedasya ma'anistha, you are two foundations of the Veda, of knowledge. Shrutam me ma'prahasi, and that which was revealed to me, don't leave me. Anena adhitena, by that learned, ahoratrani, ahoratran samdadhami. I connect, I collect, as you collect pearls on the string, days and nights, by that which was learned. I will speak the truth, says the Ritam Vadishyami, but not just truth, but dynamic truth. I will speak the truth, he repeats, static truth, Satyam Vadishyami. Tanmam Avatu, may that increase me, or protect me, or make me grow. Tadvaktaram Avatu, make that protect, make grow the speaker. Vaktaram. Protect me, protect the speaker. It's an interesting concept. It's a Vedic concept of the word. The word is an expression of consciousness. Later we see the word as a token, as an indicator, a signifier, to some signified somewhere. But not a direct expression of consciousness. That directness of relations of the word to the consciousness was lost somewhere by something which happened in between. And what happened in between, we tried to look into that through this paper, the shift of paradigms. It's another way of talking about it. More rational way. But it's interesting way. If we already engage ourselves in a rational way to look for this truth, we may find it even. So if you have some comments for this, because this introduction basically, it's like in a nutshell, we have the whole presentation, the whole course is here, somewhere hidden there, yes?
Something about if the whole nation started to speak in Sanskrit, that you were bringing up, about a change of consciousness.
Well, that there is a meaning in it. I try to derive from all these studies the meaning of that. What would happen if the whole nation suddenly would connect to that language? You could imagine that. In itself, this language is very ancient, and even more than ancient, it has its own source. That means we do not know how old it is. Yes, maybe it has no age. It's an ageless language, because if you can see that there is a system of roots, system of simple root sounds, etymons, from which families of words and are derived, then you can see that this language does not require any other language to explain its own derivations. It refers to itself. It's like, we do not know why it's a book. Who can say why the word book, it doesn't explain anything. You cannot really derive from the word book this meaning. You have to remember it, or a table. You just have to remember that this is a chair where we sit on, whereas in Sanskrit, it will be self-explanatory. This will be asanam, the sitting place. This will be utpitika, supporting place. This will be grantha, collection of pages, and so on. So, if I take a rifle, I always use rifle or pistol. We do not know why rifle shoots. Maybe somewhere there is some derivation. But if you take in Sanskrit, it will be shooting thing. It will tell what it does. It will indicate through its own root what it means. So you don't need to ask in Sanskrit, do you know what I mean? Because that meaning is already there in what you say. The meaning is there. You may mean many things, but the meaning is clearly there. We will do this very often.
If we do systematically, every day we say, okay, we learn a root, that would be really wonderful.
We are starting now with this, since it is an introductory course, and we have to arrive to our Western also vision, Greeks and Western thought, Western linguistics, starting from Humboldt.
Sanskrit has this system of sounds and the roots of words, and each word has meaning derived from the roots. In Western languages, there are many words which derive from Greek or Latin roots, and they are, if you go back to the root, they explain themselves.
Right. Well.
So, yes. It's not all the words, like book and table and chair seem to be random. Of course, I don't know what the roots of those words are, but words like religion, education,
right.
They have roots in Latin and Greek, and then the meaning comes forth in
yes.
The word.
Partially. Again, why partially? Because the system of roots was not preserved in ancient Greek or ancient Latin. It's a partial system. Though it is still systematic with the sound, it doesn't cover the whole vision. It doesn't see how it is relating to the articulatory device of man. It got lost. And we will look into that, how it got lost and why we are at what we see language is for now. Right. The first time when these scholars...
The meaning and sound is correlated.
Right. Well, that because mind interfered and mind brought some other meanings in, yeah, structural meanings, then it became kind of blurred, but still it is maintained, yes? It is maintained throughout the language, which is difficult for us for now to understand how it can be that the sound is as a color, as you take, for example, colors for the painter, yes? R will be, for example, white color, E will be red color, U will be blue color, and with these colors I will start mixing them and painting. They will be, how to say, the meaning of them will be maintained throughout the system of words. They will mean something very close.
To that which is painted, all that will be painted. Is there openness?
May I go on this question?
Yeah.
If it is like that, then automatically we could write a theory and say that some sounds, let's say, which are represented in Sanskrit language, should be understandable by any human being, even if it doesn't know the mind meaning. Is it possible to say like this?
The problem is here that that sound and meaning is derived from higher realms of consciousness. Now, when you come down to this mental, normal mind, which is operating by structures already, and not by that subtlety of consciousness, of its vibration, then what we have something else. Yes? We lost this ability in time. We remember meanings. We apply them through memory. I remember that the table must be this, and chair must be that, and that's why we always use it symbolically. Language represents something. It is not the thing. It's not the vibration of my consciousness. Of course, partially, it is still there. The way how I speak, the way how vibrates my voice, the way how communication takes place, body language, all that is a part of that expression of consciousness. But we are not yet, or we lost the ability to recognize the sound as meaningful.
So that means if you go listening to such meanings, let's say, something like that, then you can get only partially some. Because for me it was interesting, it was very impressive to listen to such evocations or to sing them, even without knowing Sanskrit. So I got some of this vibration without knowing what it means. Is it that what you want to say?
No. I don't
something
want to say that, yes. If I would say that, that would mean that any kind of expression of sound would have, you can be mistaken by any other meaning. You know, for example, I will give you a very good example. I will give you meaningless sound in the way that you would feel that presence. I can carry my consciousness through meaningless sound to this particular expression. It's a strange thing to do, but I would never do it in such a setting. But since you kind of want to clarify this point, suppose I will take chandas, any chandas, as a poetic rhythm, and fill it with no meaning, yeah? With sounds without meaning. For example, na 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 na. You feel something? What is that? Yes, chandas. Chandas is a rhythm within the consciousness, which is powerful. Now I can fill it with all kinds of syllables, meaningful or less meaningful, and it would have that magic impact. You don't need to know much of what is being said. You would feel presence and so on. What I'm pointing to much more difficult thing, deeper, meaningful unfolding of our consciousness to the depth of itself, which is not happening through rhythm only. It requires more than that. That was my main argument with Rod when he just casually said in our setting once that it doesn't matter what words are there. He wanted to emphasize the power of chandas, which is there. Any words would be playing that meaning because chandas is there. It's not like that. Otherwise, na-na-na-na-na will do the work. It won't do the work.
What does it mean in Arabic language? Because here, some Muslims really in the Quran, clear in a very good form. You can grasp something more than only the Muslim language. You can get something of the contents.
This, you mean this invocations in the morning?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
This is Nanana effect. First of all, I will tell you why I think that it is Nanana effect, because I load this Nanana with my consciousness. I didn't do Nanana in mechanical way to you. I really loaded it with something which was transmitted to you. Now that man who is invoking, he's loading. Loading with all his content. That's what comes to you.
Yeah.
So it means that you don't need basically to know what is there. If you hear that it is an expression of the being, of the heart, of the soul, of the voice, yes, which is a kind of, using this sound to carry that particular state of consciousness. And you get it, partially. Of course, you can even connect to that. You do not know what it is. Verbally you cannot express it yet. I am speaking about even deeper sense, where you can verbally understand, mentally distinguish and recognize the truth, which is beyond your possibilities to recognize. Suddenly it's a new truth to you. Something more than what you are already, and how you can respond with whatever you are now to that particular sound. You learn something new. And that is what language does. It's a verbal carrier of consciousness. It's not only mechanical, rhythmical, and vocal. Now that particular side we lost, that ability of consciousness we lost in time because of mental structures taking over. Now, when they took over and how it was described in this introduction, and maybe some of you had time to look into that, because this is introduction is loaded with meanings. Yeah? And if you could see where that shift happened and how and why, we could understand many things. I would love if you would ask some questions. Or make some comments. I didn't answer your question. I would love to answer it. But there was something there shifting, drifting. I didn't come back to it. But could you please come back to it? And we can build up around it some, at least this review of this.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah? Well, before I move into Vedic studies. Oh, you don't remember your question?
No, I know.
Right.
So I think you made a very big statement.
All right.
About Sanskrit and what it would mean for the nation to revive Sanskrit as a language.
To bring the whole nation spoke Sanskrit and bring revive. I mean, in a way, the statement encompasses the whole of your of what you're saying, which is that Sanskrit holds something that nothing, no other language holds. So which I take on. So. In a way, the indirect question that comes from the statement that you made that I'm asking is, well, it's really the process of evolution of language, really.
Right.
Because one would say there's a reason why new languages came about, the reason why Sanskrit retained itself but stayed behind, if you like, not used in the general population, and that there's a reason why language has evolved out of that place where the sound is the thing. Mm. There's a reason why that gap was made. Mm-hmm. Because we have to understand something else by sign, by language. And then of course it's beautiful to come back to the essence, which is obviously carried in Sanskrit.
It's a nice expression, by the way, what you did. In a way, it's a very beautiful and complex thing, because once the language was the expression of consciousness at the beginning and became later something else, expression of mental consciousness, not of direct and higher mind, but of ordinary rational mind, which is dealing with reality as such, physical reality. The shift was so dramatic and so obvious that if you take the system of philosophy, which was, for example, in Upanishads, and see the system of philosophy in Sankhya, you will see the difference striking. Yes? First of all, in Upanishads, it's all around something which we call Brahman or consciousness. Yes? All the faculties are Brahman's faculties. The speech, the mind, the sight, hearing, all of them, they are expression of this spirit. Now, in Samkhya we have already a change. Suddenly we have this buddhi ahamkara. Ahamkara is our ego, which builds manas. And from manas we have five indriyas. So all the faculties of consciousness are centered around the mind, manas. There is no more consciousness. There is mind, which is operating through these indriyas, taking their inputs, reinterprets them as it sees true, and represents consciousness. Consciousness becomes representative. It is no more direct. It doesn't have a tool of direct expression anymore. Speech is representative. It's a symbol, a token of something which is there behind it. So, if we see the Vedic concept of speech, it was as if there was a higher consciousness, and the possibility to express it in language, in the word, was still there. We go to the Vedas, to the Vedic language, we will find that this language is luminous and wide, and all the possibilities are there, and it can shift from one luminosity to another shadow of meaning, and so on and so forth. That ability we do not have anymore. We don't have the higher mind consciousness, the cosmic vision, which will express itself in these luminous words, creating ideas. The powers which are expressed were creative of ideas, creative of thoughts, creative of objects. There is a beautiful myth in Mahabhashya of Patanjali, which I would like to mention today, especially in this context of mind taking over the speech. Yes, according to this tradition, the first grammarian in India is considered to be Indra himself. And Vyakarana is called Aindra Vyakarana, Aindra belonging to Indra. So Indra was the first disciple of Brihaspati. Brihaspati was the lord of the divine word, who was teaching Sanskrit to the gods. So what is this Sanskrit or that divine speech he was teaching? We do not know. That may be that original word. So when Indra was sitting at his feet and Brihaspati was going on teaching him endlessly, because the flood of his speech had no end, it was infinite, infinite in its expression and shades of meanings, and it was always actual to its own time of its own expression. So the expression of consciousness was true to the environment when and where it was expressed. Can you imagine such language? Never lying. What it was saying, it was there. It was that. Now, later, if we see into the definition of the reader of signified and signifier, it's very interesting. He says that signifier is never that. and signified is never there. Now, this never that and never there, which speech became after Indra learned it from Brihaspati, is exactly what I want to say, that when Brihaspati was telling, sounding it, it was true. True means that what he was saying was there, and it was that. It was expressing the truth of that environment and of that being, of that power, of that meaning, in that moment of time, though he was beyond time. Now, when Indra understood that, that he would never learn Sanskrit from Brihaspati because it has no end and it flows endlessly in time, in that infinite time, what he did? He stopped Brihaspati's speech and he cut it into pieces and he created grammar. Now think what grammar may be. What is this grammar? He cut it into grams, into pieces. He created mental categories of subject and object, of verb and name, and so on and so forth, of number, of space and time. He introduced all these categories into speech to capture it. Now he captured it, he had it, he could really express anything he would want. But what it lost that inevitable self-actuality and self-truthfulness to its own environment of space and time. By this act he created time and space. He could apply the word now into any context, whether it is true or not. The word is still true, but the context may not support it. Does it make sense? It's a profound vision. How mind interferes and chisels or sculptures the speech into something else, what we are now using. That's why we say, do you know what I mean? Because I may mean something different than it sounds. Because the whole thing is already shifted in every respect. Myself, I am not aware of what I am saying. Maybe you may help me to understand what I am saying. So in that sense, we are all trying to communicate. What a mess, yes?
Continuum, but that before grammar came in, and it is what it is. If you look at it in terms of semantics, where sound is a form, sound vibration creates form, there have been some interesting little experiments with that, where, and probably people have seen the om, when you chant the om onto a semantics table, you get the circles, and the thing that happens is that that sound is actually three-dimensional. We are translating it, we're seeing it as a one-dimension. And what some people have found with the ancient Egyptians is that if you go into a particular tomb with a particular shape and chant a particular sound, the form of the letter that is used in Egyptian is actually visibly seen in two dimensions, because of how we're looking at it. But in actuality, it is three dimensions. So in actuality, it is what it is. It is the form. We kind of sliced it like that and taken that print and used that as the letter. So that symbol is representation. It is what it is. So it's that, the original Sanskrit, the original language, is form.
Yes.
But because we want to use it to communicate, we're all, well, grammar, but I really like how you describe that. So it's been cut up, so it's already becoming less what it is.
And there are more possibilities in time and space. There are more possibilities to play with these meanings in time and space. There is a multiplication I can multiply the same statement of Brihaspati in everybody's creature, in everybody's soul. Everybody can say in different time, in different context, the same word of Brihaspati. Can you imagine what it gives us? What kind of possibilities? There it was fixed to the truthfulness of its own. Now it may move and create the worlds, shape them out, create new ideas, interact with each other in different way, how it wasn't possible to do with Brihaspati's speech, because it was fixed by its own truthfulness.
So there's a limitation, but also a possibility.
Yes. Otherwise, why he should do that? Why he should create this multiple world? And how he could do it? Now, we are looking into this creation through this linguistic eyes, yes? We could see it differently, metaphysically or otherwise, but we are using this tool of linguistics to see how he created this multiple creation. Well, these are fascinating topics, and myself, they are, I'm kind of coming to them every time, and I feel that we are at the you know, edge of discovering something completely new about ourselves. Because now when this word traveled out, traveled to all those deep and corners and far away, you know, darknesses of our being, separated by many shapes and forms and interactions, and became something else altogether, it has to find its own truthfulness back. Can you imagine that all that traveled far away word, luminous word, will find again its own truthfulness? What would happen to the world, this multiple world? We are all this, every one of us is this supreme cosmos within itself. And now all the categories we carry within ourselves will become luminous and infinite. That's how he wanted to become many. Each one of us will be him in full sense, not in a partial reduced sense of Leela, but in the full sense of his manifestation. It's unbelievable when we think about it. Why that deviation was necessary from the source is to create a multitude. Yeah, one wants to dwell on it, to see it more. One wants to widen this vision and to make it our own. But if we go into this material and we'll see step by step, we will discover all these things already spoken there. Now, what I got from... I'm just coming from Bangalore, from this seminar on the Gita, 2 days seminar, arrived in the night. And I got some new glimpses of how that speech, Vedic speech, was at the beginning of that Vedic age. Yes? It was, there was no other topic other than the word. The word was the expression of consciousness, and it was expressing everything through its own expression. There was no subject of philosophy or psychology or other approaches to knowledge. Yes? There was no philosophical knowing or psychological knowing or linguistic knowing as we are talking now. There was one knowing. Knowing as such, an expression of it, was carrying that power and could create the world, could create understanding within ourselves. Now, later it happened to be that because of this mental, rational structure took over, it shaped not only categories, it shaped also different approaches to knowledge. So we suddenly started to speak philosophically or psychologically, and they are not even comparable. Sometimes my shift is too big and the tongue is going off. So I printed out a new part, but since you don't want to say more on this, and this is fine, we can come back to it again after reviewing all the stages. We can start today with Vedic vision of the word, what it was and how Vedas express it. And there are a few copies here. Unfortunately, they are huge, and I can't give you many more, and it takes time to make them. So I printed first part of the first half. You can pass it on and see if somebody can do this in some way. Now, yes, Rod will explain to you how to use internet. You can download them and see for yourself or read from there without downloading them. I need one copy for myself at least for now. And then I will give it.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I have one.
So, now, is that not this? That you just handed
that out? You see, I actually overloaded you with information.
Yeah.
And, yes, and then I expect you to read it for yourself. And if you would have questions, I would love to discuss them. But if you don't, I would rather go ahead and tell you what I am planning to tell. I can't dwell on this. This would take all our seminars, all of them, this introduction. If we start looking into Gebser and then all these shifts, there's so much of it to think. But we got the gist of the spirit, and that's the main thing, because I want to dwell on this material, linguistic material. So those who have some copies and see the text, I start with some major concepts of the word in the Veda. So the word, how it was seen. It's interesting that I would like to start with completely different text. At the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. This is to prove that Brihaspati's speech, yes? That was the beginning. It was Brihaspati himself who was sounding his own power. It was him. It wasn't different from him. But you know what happened next? Nobody reads after this phrase. This phrase is more than enough to bear. But what happened afterwards? What happened to that word? That word traveled down, it seems. And it became a flesh of man, flesh of Jesus. How come? How word can become a flesh?
Both are energy.
Yeah.
So they can change each other.
Energy.
Do you have an equation?
You were telling today about this form also, formation by the sound. Sri Aurobindo has his own theory on that. It's Vedic theory of the creative word. Word creates. Word creates not only our perception or our impressions in consciousness, it creates also forms of knowledge. It creates our, shapes our instrumentation. How we perceive, what we see, what we prefer, on what we emphasize, where we go, where we concentrate, and so on and so forth. And by that, the whole movement of energy goes, shaping the world. So, in this, there are a few points which I would like to highlight before we start the discussion. The word is always spoken of as ukta, vachas, shastra, stoma, gih, vak, vani, brahman, mantra, naman. Now, just see how many words are for
yes,
the word.
In the first text,
I printed out another one.
Second.
This is the, that was only an introduction for us to dwell what we want to deal with. Now we are moving into the text. So I'm just quoting from my own writing here, not to forget something. So it is a secret speech. Guhya, guha, gudha, apichya, pratichya, ninya, ninya vachansi. For it is seen as a power of the divine consciousness emerging out of the darkness of inconscient, manifesting itself in the world. The word, second point which I want to say, the word itself belongs to the Lord. It is Him. No? It travels out of Him to this world, does something, or it is emerging out of Him, does something, manifests Him and comes back to Him. In the Vedic vision, word always returns to the Lord. It is as if it is a circuit of the word, as if the power of creation comes out, creates the whole, manifests the Lord and comes back to Him. It is His consciousness, and when uttered by man in form of a hymn, as conscious offering, it is returning to its master. Now, it's a very important point when man offers the word in the most conscious way, or uses the word as a carrier of his consciousness, as a tool, or as an energy to uplift himself in this manifestation, it returns to his master.
Could you then say it becomes self-conscious again, which will often has come to the unconscious?
But that is how he becomes self-conscious of himself in this multiple creation. There is nobody here else. It's only him who is uttering the word to become more and more conscious of himself in this multiple creation. The third point which I want to highlight is, it is in this way that the word creates the world. It is coming down from the Lord and it is rising up back to his master. It is by this stirring within the creation of a triple being of mind, life and body that the word brings into motion the divine consciousness and creates all the beings in a new fashion, more suitable for the divine expression. It's as if stirring. If you don't like this idea up and down, you can use the idea of inner and outer. From within to outside, it comes and goes back to within. Or from above, down, and... Or from within, from down, if you like, up, and again, back. Because we are already determined by... Our mind is determining spatial relations. We need to see this hierarchy up and down. Otherwise, actually, it's all within Him. Up and down is very relative, but they are significant for us. These are symbols. We are using them in a symbolic way. And the fourth point, which I would like to highlight before I go to the quotations, was there is always a new word, a new name, which has to be discovered. And this is difficult to understand. It's in the Vedic context. If we read Vedic hymns, you will find very interesting, sharp distinctions among those who were carrying a new word actual to that time in manifestation, in evolution to be expressed. It's like Brihaspati's speech there, only here in time, it has to be expressed in this particular moment of time because it carries consciousness on this level. Now, if that is done, then we are moving ahead. Yes, we are rising. If that is not done, if we are repeating the word of old, which has no relevance anymore, then we resist the manifestation with the word. And we are serving different masters, masters of darkness. That was the vision of the Vedic Rishis.
Then understand that
Vedic. Yes. It seems that the word as a power of consciousness has to be actual also in time and space here. It is not only by playing, of course that play would be also determined by some consciousness and resistance and everything in the battlefield will be determined by the needs of that growing consciousness, but still, it depends where you will be, on what side. Actually, it doesn't matter for the manifestation. You may take any side. You can be resisting the word, resisting the manifestation, because it's also a job to do. Yes? The stirring of the ocean by asuras and devas, they are both working hard to manifest the amrita, the immortality. It's only up to you where you want to be, what kind of part you want to take. You may take God's part, or you may take asura's part, which is more difficult to do. You have to be stronger for that. His mother says asuras could really uphold the darkness because they are stronger than gods. They took on themselves the darkness. They dared to do it. They lost something of their luminosity because of that. But they have a power to be engaged into this, upholding the manifestation. Now, I'm speaking with you now in Vedic terms, yes? It should be understood. It should not be taken in moralistic or any other sense, because then we are lost. I'm not promoting darkness or something like that. I'm saying that it is functional, meaningful, for the manifestation of the Lord. Now, in the Veda, we see this image often, which is puzzling everybody, and everybody drops immediately when they see this, that Agni, the Divine Consciousness, grows by the means of night and day, or the dawn and night, two sisters, two mothers are feeding him. He is growing by the means of darkness also, not only by the means of light. They are both feeding him. The finite and infinite consciousness are his mothers. And he is growing by them in time and space. They are creating time and space. Now, it's only for us as souls, if we don't accept this new word, always new, always fresh, always true, to this time and space, then we repeat something of old, which already resists in some way this manifestation. You can feel it in yourself. Actually, Auroville is the place to feel this particular thing. You cannot repeat the same truth all the time. You will have to rediscover it every day in you, every moment in you. When I wrote this, I wanted to read to you. Now I see I can't read it, because it's off the time. I cannot really bring this truth now in this particular form. It's gone. In that time when I was doing it, it was there. But now it's no more here. I have to reform it. I have to be with you, to stay with you. Otherwise, where would we be? I will finish my lecture in the university, and all the students will, load it into their minds, go to the examination and spit it on the teacher, and that would be it. And then they will go their own way to live, as we all did, and learn their own truths differently than universities proposed. This actuality to this time and space is the key to the new word to emerge. We always have to call for it and to make it possible. Now, the Veda says it goes even farther. And says that the forces behind this word, which is of old, are the forces of darkness. The forces of the first creation who already got the glimpse of the truth and they don't want to let it go. They dwell on it, they build on it, they create on it their own world, they sustain the manifestation. So they want to preserve their existence without accepting any change, because every change is a work. It's a new introduction of the Lord's consciousness, which was not here. We have to invite it again. It has to enter with fresh mind, with fresh perception. And it's not easy. So these forces, they corrupt the consciousness of man. The ever-advancing pilgrim, as the Veda says. A man, the definition of man, is ever-advancing pilgrim. See the beautiful concept. Never stopping advancing pilgrim. Whenever we stop advancing, we are using the old word. The word of old. So they corrupt the consciousness of man and offer him the word of crookedness, the Veda says. The word of crookedness. The Aryan is looking for the word of straightness. These are symbolic images. You can see the beauty of them. Straightness is that you don't need to make something with a word which is not here now, in this moment of time. The sincerity, this is the best definition of sincerity, the word of straightness, instead of the word of crookedness, where you manage and arrange things in such a way that you will catch something and dwell on something and have something finally. Well, I'm exaggerating a little bit, just for the sake of having that perception. You wanted to say? It looks like everybody wants to say something, Anna. That's good. If you want to say something, you interrupt. And if something is not clear, it's important to clarify. Please do that. Otherwise we will be, you know, again, in the kind of symbols of talking. Yeah.
It's difficult to express it, because if I understand what you mean, all this development of the Vedic meaning of the manifest of the divine consciousness being embodied and being created. When I refer to word with my own human experience, I feel that it's more in the silence that I'm able to connect myself to this coming down and also to this newness, what you called it. A new world, the actuality of ever. My own experience is that if I can connect to this manifestation, it is through silence and not through word.
Wonderful. You actually express that, the means by which we can connect that true word. Because what is that true word, if not, it is that fired, fiat emerging out of the depth of silence in Savitri Sri Aurobindo speaks, and waited for the fiat to arrive through the depth of silence of the self. Something. I will give you the exact quotation, but that is exactly what the word is. The word is that expression of that depth of consciousness. If you want to have that word, you must be silent. You must cross that silent space. It is through that silence that it would arrive. It would not arrive from endless repetitions of the mind, structuring, restructuring the same thing, repeating the same word without understanding what it is. You're absolutely right. So the word has levels. Now, we will come to these four levels of the word. Paravak, Pashyantivak, Madhyamavak, and Vaikharivak. But it is later when we will come to this. Still, it's a very valid observation. To come to this creative word, there is only one way, is to silence the mind. Because the mind is exactly that noise which is not allowing word to come through. Once mind is silenced, the word would create its own structure within the mind. We'll use the mind as
but
a channel.
In the silence you receive some intuition, for example.
Yes.
New word.
Yes.
Intuition.
Right.
Through the silence of mind.
Yes.
It's true.
the divine world.
Yes. And it is always fresh. And it is always new. And nothing we can do about it. So we have to be used to this idea that we have to be always fresh and new. We should not be lazy. We should not dwell on our findings. We should rediscover them every time. Of course, we have already some level or some leverage which may help us, some tools. But these tools are only to help us to again silence the mind and again invite this creative word. I'm very glad that you brought this topic of silencing the mind. Now I'm going into these quotations, and I'm not sure, maybe I should skip them altogether for the sake of you reading it, this paper. You can download it from the internet. Or you can take copies and make photocopies and then bring...
I'll take care of all of that.
All right. Rod is, can manage that. Now I would like to go first, of course, to these quotations of four different levels of speech and hymns to Brihaspati and the beginning of Atharva Veda, these famous, absolutely luminous words about the word. And it would be very useful for us to dwell on them for a while, but since we don't have text in hand, maybe it would be a little difficult. But I will read few of, at least of them. O Lord of the Word, that first movement of the Word at the beginning of creation, when they, gods, moved establishing the name that must be established. What was the best and the pure that they discovered by the power of love hidden in the cave of the heart? Now, it's already we are moving into another time and space, and you can imagine it's only one verse, and it is full of these verses, one after each other. So it requires another elevation of consciousness to really dwell on these visions. Brihaspati prathamam vacho akram yat prayarata namadheyam dadhanah yadesham shreshtam yadaripram asit prenatat esham nihitam guharih. The origin of the word is hidden deep in the cave of subconscious. It is added sometimes that it is hidden in the cave of the heart, hridi guhaya. The word is rising from that hidden place, and it creates in us a new perception, a new consciousness, capable of perceiving the divine, because it is like the expression of that divine consciousness. So you can imagine when that expression takes place in your consciousness, which is not the divine, which is partially determined by this darkness, it suddenly opens up something in you, and you can see something of the divine reality in a new way, in this darkness. That's what we are all kind of looking for. This is one origin within the heart, which Sri Aurobindo comments as Brahman. We will read his quotations. But there is another perception of the word as established in the highest heaven, Paramev Yoman. And there are famous verses from 164. Richo akshare paramev yoman yasmin deva adhi vishve nishedu yastam na veda kim richa karishyati ya ittad vidu te ime samasate. The hymns are in the highest heaven. The sacred verses are in the highest heaven, where all the gods abide. The one who does not know that, what will he do with this word? But those who know that, they are perfectly united. United, there is no object to be united. They are united with the deeper, with the inner consciousness and the outer expression. And the verse goes on. It's a huge hymn, there are many verses of it, but only a few I can quote here. How the word creates. Gaurir Mimaya Salilani Takshati Ekapadi Dvipadi Sachatushpadi Ashtapadi Navapadi Babhushi Sahasrakshara Paramediyoman. She has created the streams of luminous waters. The word, she is the word. In Sanskrit is she, not he. She is the mother, the divine mother. The strongest among lights, Gauri. She has fashioned all the creatures as one, two, and four-footed, who became the eight and nine-footed, which is very mysterious language. The thousand aksharas of the word are in the highest heaven. The thousand aksharas are in the highest heaven. You can imagine the highest heaven filled with these original sounds, with these vibrations, which are awaiting to be discovered in our consciousness. We have to let them come in and manifest all the forms in this manifestation through ourselves. Tasyaha samudra adhivi ksharanti. It is from her, the all-creating word, that the waters of the upper ocean flow down in all directions. It is by that movement all live in every corner of the world. It is from that movement of the word that unchangeable is changing, or being is becoming. It is from that movement that all universe lives. Well, I just quoted three verses from the Rig Veda, where there are 10,000 verses, and you can imagine they are all charged with that consciousness. And then there is a quotation which is very essential for us to go into tantric vision of the word. Chatvari vak parimita padani tani viduf brahmana ye manishina guhatrini ninghita nengayanti turiyam vacho manushyavadanti. The word has been measured in four quarters. Those quarters are known to the knowers of the word, Brahmanas. They are the knowers of the word, who possess also the power of the mind, Manishina. They have the power of the word and the power of the mind. That's my word is established in my mind, and my mind is my word. In the hidden place, the three are established. The three quarters, which do not move. And the fourth one, man speak here. We all speak only the fourth quarter of this speech. The three are hidden there, somewhere in the depth of consciousness. Now, these quotations become then the foundation for the tantric approach and Bharatrihari's approach to speech in the post-Vedic period. and I will refer to it again when we will come to that. Now we are moving into most interesting part, which nobody quotes, next verse, because it is so mysterious that nobody dares even to look into it, but we will have a glimpse. We will dare to have a glimpse. Krishnam niyanam harayav suparna apovasana divam utpatanti ta avavritran sadanadritasya ad idgharitena prathivi vyudyate. Dark the descent and golden the birds. Dark the descent and golden the birds. Thus, wearing the robes of the waters of the apas, they are rising to heaven, and again they return from the seat of the truth, and all the earth is moistened with their golden clarity. It's an interesting vision. It's nearly psychological, as if we somehow know it by experience, in our deep being. Dark the descent. Krishnam niyanam. Niyanam, going down, deep, going into the depth. Going into the depth, to the bottom of things, is dark. Harayak suparna apovasana divam utpatanti. But the golden birds with perfect wings, wearing the waters of that dark inconscient, on their wings, on their feathers, they take it, they catch it, they carry it up. Divam utpatanti, they are flying up to the heaven with the dark waters on their feathers. They are diving as a, you know, kingfisher dives, and they take the waters and they carry it up. And again they return from the seat of the truth. Ta avavritram sadanadritasya. And they come back from there, from the seat of the truth. When they reach the heaven, they fly down again. And gharitena, with this golden clarity, with the golden butter, vi udyate prithivi, they are moistening the prithivi, the earth. So what is this vision? And it is next to this word. So it is relating to this vision of the world. Who are these golden birds descending into the darkness and wearing the form of waters? Why do they fly up to the sky again and again, return to the earth to moisten it with the clarified butter? Gharita. Shubindu translates gharita as clarity. Yes, Rob.
What are the four borders of the world?
Yes, that is what we come to the tantric after. Paravak, Pashyanti Vak, Madhyama, and Vaikari. Paravak is a supreme speech, transcendental word. Pashyanti Vak is a seeing word, where the flash, lightning of the intuition coming down, breaking through to our lower hemisphere. The lightning or pratibha of the Lord Indra, breaking down with his intuition, illumining everything, bringing new meaning into the language field. Madhyama is our language field, where we build up our understanding by the means of those flashings and by the means of this dark support from below. And Vaikari is that which is expressed, heard, finalized, formed in the manifestation. Yes?
Time's up. Can you just repeat what the second was?
Second quarter, Pashyanti? From below or from above?
From below.
From below is Madhyamavak.
Yeah.
is the middle speech,
the
middle word, the intermediary one, that one which is dressing the intuition into the language. It's the world of language.
Conceptualizing it.
Formalizing it, whatever it may be, yes? It may be language, it may be any other form of language. Dance, mathematics, music, painting, any.
So that means it's in the middle of...
It's in between heaven and earth.
And speech. Yes. And para is transcendent of both. That's why the middle is here.
Yes. We will come to that in detail. We will dwell on it in detail. So for now, I would like to finish this quotation with these birds, and we will finish. It is on the way up, they wear the waters of our offering. The waters of our offering, they carry up to heaven. And on the way back, they carry the clarified butter to nourish the growth of Agni. They sprinkle this, and the fire grows. The clarified butter is feeding the luminous divine consciousness to grow here in darkness. It is here involved, and it is growing by that support. The descent into the darkness as shining birds from heaven, and they ascend carrying our unillumined substance of consciousness, which is offered to be illumined for transformation up to heaven. It is the whole vision of the Vedic sacrifice. This is the stirring by the word. Okay, we will stop for now. Yeah.
It's a question about these printouts. Are you going to have packets like, or this much text for us to read every week? and if you do, when will it be up on the website?
It is already on the website.
Like everything?
Not everything, but step by step.
Okay.
Because I am also we are co-creators of the course. It's not that it is already, you know, shaped. Some parts are already finished, but we are looking for new ways of really making it. So let us be creative and see how we can really make it together. Also on the website, I would really encourage you to help to create this course. It could be a wonderful thing for all of us. Everybody has some bits, some specific perception nobody has. And that contribution is so valuable. You could see it yourself. Last time we had such a wonderful interaction I never had. We don't need to be passive. We could really wake up to this learning together. So we will end with a minute of silence.
मनो मे वाचि प्रतिष्ठितम् आविराविर्मयेदि वेदस्य मा आनीस्थः श्रुतं मे मा प्रहासि अनेनाधीतेन होरात्रां संदधामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारमवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् अवतु वक्तारम् ॐ